Welcome in, and thanks for joining three guys who look a whole lot like their caricatures on that first frame there. Bob Stevens, formerly of ESPN, Curry Kirkpatrick, formerly of Sports Illustrated, Rich Pasirico, Hall of Fame basketball coach. Oh, we're in Coach Pasirico's wheelhouse right now. Let's start throwing people under the bus. Got anybody in the NBA, Rich?
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I'm going to start with two. First of all, this goes back a week, but still, I think it's important. Klay Thompson, the Golden State, averaging close to 18 points a game, scores 0 points. Zero. So hear that number again, zero. He's averaging 18. Of course, they lose the first round. They're out in a play-in.
Hey, yeah, where's Golden State right now? Zero.
Zero. How do you?
I think
NBA player like that, as good as he is, scores no points. Go ahead, Curry.
Well, I think Rich is a week behind of this stuff. I just want to say, you know, I've been a college basketball honk for a long time for the NBA, but Monday night that doubleheader in New York and Denver was, I mean, for drama and theater and the stars coming out, it was the most amazing baseball playoffs, tennis semifinals, that thing from both games. But it was an incredible night for the NBA.
It was spectacular.
Absolutely.
But that was the only team I was going to throw under the bus was Philly. You know, in the first game, they were down five under 30 seconds to go. So it's a two-possession game, and they don't foul until there's 3 seconds left. Why? This is the NBA. This is the best of the best coaches, best players. Down five with 30 seconds to go, and you don't foul until there's 3 seconds to go. And then last night, of course, what Curry's referring to, They were up by five with less than 30 seconds to go and ended up losing by three. Incredible finish. Incredible.
Well, in New York, you know, Philadelphia Maxey hits the great jumper to put him up by five with 27 seconds left. Everybody's right. Saying it's a miracle finish, you know, the 5 points down, 27 seconds. In the NBA, you know, the Knicks had the ball. So Brunson makes a three, and the ball bounces around the rim. He finally makes a three. I think it's only the second three he's made in two games. And I think Philadelphia was so stunned that the ball went in. Now they're taking it out under. And you know, Charles Barkley after the game said they should have called timeout right away after Brunson scores to cut it to two. Correct. But they didn't. But the replays show that the Philadelphia coach, Nurse, is over on the sidelines. He is calling for timeout. Now, I don't know, Rich, you guys, the rule in college is coaches can call timeout from the sidelines.
Correct.
Is that the same rule in the NBA, or do players have to call timeout?
No, they can call timeout.
Well, then they didn't give Knicks the timeout.
I know.
Nurse complained about the timeout.
He complained about that.
Yeah, and they should have. But then the scramble for the ball and DeVincenzo, I mean, the Villanova bucket brigade, the three guys at backcourt were just sensational, even though Brunson had a bad night shooting. I mean, Hart has come up big, and they won the first game because of Hart.
Correct.
He had 13 in the fourth, and then last night he's shooting out his butt. But then I want to give credit, rather than throwing it under the bus, to the Knicks center, Isaiah Hartenstein. I mean, whoever heard of this guy? Embiid is playing on one leg. I just thought the game, you know, as I said, the panoply of the drama in this game was incredible, only to be matched by the second game. But let's give it to Hartenstein, who goes, you know, he got the rebound of the miss of DiVincenzo. He gets it out to him again. They score to go ahead. And then he goes down and he blocks Maxey's game-winning layup. I mean, spectacular block. Or the Knicks lose. I mean, Maxey's going to make that layup. And he blocked it from behind.
Got to the basket. He got to the basket, and you say, "Oh no, they're going."
The game's
down.
Over. The game's over.
Yeah.
And Hartenstein came out of nowhere to block it from behind. Speaking of nowhere, this guy, you know, his father played for Oregon. Everybody says he's born in Germany. He's not born in Germany. The family moved to Germany because his father was playing pro ball there, and he went from, you know, playing in the Bundesliga in Germany. He went to Lithuania and played for Tagliass for some time. Houston drafted him the 47th draft pick, which isn't that low when you think about it. But then they farmed him out and he played. He was the MVP of the G League for the Rio Bravo Valley Vipers. I mean, I've looked this guy up.
Where did you get all this information from?
Well, and then because I am astounded by some of the background of these people that we've never heard of. And, you know, he bounced around. He's been with five teams. He had a cup of coffee with the Clippers, before that with Cleveland. And then he's traded to the Knicks. And, you know, he's like the god of Gotham after last night. I mean, that block. He's also married to this spectacular blonde model who used to be a Texas Miss Texas International. Her name is Courtney Keller, and they're like the power couple of the NBA now. She's got her own website and she does all this modeling. They're about to have a baby in the summer, just like our boy Scheffler. So I just want to call out and give credit to Hartenstein.
All right. He's good. I mean, he's come alive for New York. You know, he was a backup, and now the starting center got hurt, and now
You've been talking about him all year, Rich, about how he was going to be the impact player in the playoffs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Give me a break. You know, the guy is actually black. His father is black, and he's always told people, and he still does, that he is an African American, and his color comes from his mom. But he's a black kid, and in fact, he got a lot of racist complaints when he was a kid growing up in Germany. Yeah, his background's spectacular.
That's crazy.
And well, how about his tattoo? He's also the most tattooed man in the league. I mean, his arm tattoos, he's got Jesus up there. He's got Apollo. He's got, I mean, come on.
You got Rich on there.
You're his best friend. My God, you know everything about that guy.
I'm throwing his tattoos under the bus, though. I want to throw
Brunson under the bus. I mean, he's the Knicks' best player by far. He's their best player. He's the go-to guy. But he's 0-for-6 last night in the fourth quarter, and he's 0-for-6 from the three-point line. He makes that one shot, as Curry referred to. But in two games, he's 16-for-55.
Yeah, and they're 2-0. And they're 2-0. Rich, I can't believe you're throwing anybody under the bus after that spectacular Knicks. I mean, the Garden, has it ever been louder?
Right. Oh,
there's all these, you know, all of the celebrities in the crowd. I mean, it was
nuts.
Incredible.
They went nuts.
I know.
They talk about yelling out, bring on the Celtics, bring on Boston.
Yeah,
you gotta love that. You have to love that.
And meanwhile, after the game, Embiid is, you know, complaining about the referees saying it's in, you know, which he has a point about that last thing that they didn't give the timeout to Nurse. I can't believe the game would have turned out the same way if Philly.
Why wasn't anybody on the court calling for timeout though?
Well, the coach says he looked right in the referee's eye, looked right at him, and he just said he didn't give it to him. They're going to make an appeal to the NBA, which is nothing's going
to
happen.
Well, not to mention on the scramble for the ball, you know, that call in Philadelphia, Maxey gets a free throw for being pushed. I mean, they pushed him down and grabbed the ball. In Philadelphia, that is not a no call. They're going to call that.
That's Curry, correct.
Yeah, you think maybe the referees are finally making up for all the Michael Jordan calls against the Knicks by giving the Knicks a couple of calls now. 30, you know, it's been this long since the Knicks were relevant to finally give them a couple of calls.
Right.
let's go to now. Jordan. Now there's this spectacular game. Now they go to Denver and they can't possibly match that, but then they do. I mean, you know, when are the Lakers? That's 10 in a row the Lakers have lost to Denver. If they're not going to win that game last night, when are they ever going to beat this team?
They were up
20
right.
in the third quarter, and I'm watching the game. And I'm thinking, you know, this is the Laker team that everybody thinks they should be. I mean, they look like the best. They look invincible. And all of a sudden, Denver just keeps coming back, keeps plugging back. Murray, who can't hit anything for three quarters, starts going nuts in the fourth. And then it went back and forth, and you know, Murray hit this spectacular. I don't know if you saw, you know, LeBron missed the three. You know, they're going back and forth and everybody's fine about it. LeBron missed a key three, giving the ball to Denver down two. And Murray, everybody knows he's going to shoot it. He goes to right. And Anthony Davis makes a great plunge for the ball to try to block it. It goes in and both players, Murray fell on his back as the ball's going in, fell on the floor into the Denver bench. And I mean, into the LA bench. And Davis follows him, sprawling into the crowd and the Lakers. But it was just spectacular. I mean, the two games were just breathless. And, you know, as a guy that always has said, I like college basketball over the NBA, this night was, you know, I'll never forget these two games. I mean, it's just that plain.
You know what's crazy, too, when you think about it? Actually, my buddy Jack Sharp, who's I'm staying with in San Augustine, pointed out that the home teams are 11-0.
Yeah, they haven't lost
so far. And almost everyone until last night, every one of them has covered. Last night they didn't cover. But
there it is.
You have to bring it up, Curry.
You really don't.
Until last night. But yeah, 11-0. Right. Think about that. Home teams are 11-0, which is pretty
all right. Think about this. Anthony Davis had 36 or 32 or something last night. He did not score in the fourth quarter. Now, I don't know. I mean, the Lakers it's just a repeat of, you know, they lost all four games to the Nuggets last year, and they disappear in the fourth quarter. They do not play. And I think it's age, Rich. I mean, LeBron, as great as he was last night, he was just gassed at the end of the game, the last 3 minutes of the game. He's just playing on fumes. And Anthony Davis the same way. And meanwhile, the Joker is just abusing these people. I mean, he's just doing ballet moves around Davis in the fourth quarter. It was just a spectacular night. I don't want to talk about the gambling. I don't want to talk about the referees.
It's the time to watch the NBA regular season. It's really hard to watch the NBA. But in the playoffs, Curry, like you're saying, great. Those two games last night were terrific. They were outstanding.
The thing that besmirches it a little bit is after the game, both Embiid complained about the officiating, and then LeBron, after this unbelievable great game in which he played terrific, he had the gall to talk about a call in the third quarter, a shooting foul that he said he can't believe the replay officials. He said he can't believe what they're looking at in New York. You know, he's talking about a call early in the third quarter, a shooting foul. I'm going, LeBron, come on. It was one of the great fourth quarters of all time.
That's LeBron for you. That's the things he's going to bring up. But you're so right about them running out of gas. They don't have their legs. It's tough. It really is for them.
And where were they playing last night? A mile high.
At altitude, right.
Age at altitude, not a good combination. Yeah.
And now they go back to, of course, they go back to L.A. and they go back to Philadelphia. And Embiid insists, we're the better team. We're going to win the series. He said that after the game last night.
That's
great for him to say. Well, you could make a point that they've outplayed New York for two games, and they've lost both.
Right.
You know, even with Brunson shooting terrible, I'm not the biggest Brunson fan. I think you are, Rich. But, you know, I talked about Hartenstein's background. You know, the game came down last night to two Kentucky guys, Anthony Davis and Jamal Murray, Kentucky 2012, Kentucky 2016. And there's so many Kentucky guys going around in these playoffs. I want to get the one other guy who
Maxie?
I have.
Isn't Maxie from Kentucky too?
Yeah, of course. He's at the other end. He's another Kentucky kid. Yeah.
Right.
And I wonder what John Calipari thinks about watching these players of his. And just to say, I mean, he must be so proud. While he's poaching all these kids from Kentucky to Arkansas now, as he's watching this. But I want to point out another Kentucky guy in another game that goes unmentioned, even though it was a couple nights before, and that's Oklahoma City beating New Orleans in another great finish. And I had not seen this guy much. SGA, is that his name? Sean Gilgeous Alexander, SGA, some gorgeous athlete. This guy, I have not seen him much, Rich. I don't know if you follow the Thunder, but he is some terrific player. And, you know, I think other than Jokic, I think he's the most valuable player in the league. He one stat that sticks out in there, it's all these numbers. I don't like to do numbers so much, but for 2 years now, he's shot 50% and scored 30 points a game. Only one other player has ever done that in history, Michael Jordan. I mean, he took the ball at the end of that game, and everybody knows he's going to shoot it. He made a double pumping shot from his hip that went in and gave them the victory. He is he's Kentucky 2018. So I mean, you can't get away from these Kentucky. I mean,
they have an all-star team. Think about it. Calipari hasn't had an all-star team. I mean, all guys are all-stars in the NBA. He won one national championship. He had players.
Well, in 2017, when Murray played his 1 year there, he averaged 20 points for Kentucky, the most ever by a freshman. That team had seven NBA players on it at Kentucky, and he didn't win that year. So I don't know. Maybe we're throwing Calipari on the bus. Poor Cal.
Let's do it. Why not? Oklahoma City is the one seed in the West too, although nobody thinks they're going to win it.
No,
everybody thinks Denver's going to come out of the West, right?
Yeah. Well, aren't they the youngest team ever to be seeded number one? And that's why I think Gilgeous Alexander is right there in the accounting for MVP.
Well, his name is right there for it. I mean, he's
also
many times.
He's also like Murray, like Jamal Murray. He's a Canadian, for God's sakes. Both of these guys are from Ontario and Canada, and they're just blitzing our American NBA playoffs. Shout out to Canada.
All right.
The Canadian dream team in the Olympics, huh? We're going to come back and talk some women's sports. We got some interesting crossover in all of that. The NFL draft is coming up on Thursday. You guys excited? You done your last mock draft?
I'm very excited.
There you go.
Giants. Yeah, I'm thinking about going to Detroit to see it.
Under the bus. We welcome you back under the bus, Bob Stevens, along with Curry Kirkpatrick and Rich Basirico. NFL draft or women's sports first?
It's your
let's go NFL draft and get it out of the way, because women's sports is gonna segue to our third segment. The number one pick, the Bears are gonna pick the quarterback, Caleb Williams, right?
Yeah.
And then Washington's gonna pick one of the other quarterbacks, Drake May, who, as Curry's been saying for months now, is the best quarterback on the board, is from North Carolina. Who knows when he's going to get picked?
I just hope the Giants don't pick him. That's my only
wait a minute.
Giants don't pick him. He plays us, but the Giants.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The Giants going for several years with a quarterback from Duke. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
How's that working out for you, Rich?
Yeah, really.
Not very well.
The draft every year is all about the quarterbacks, and especially this year, and nobody knows who any of these other players are. I think it's interesting that the Bears apparently are going to take Caleb Williams out of Southern Cal, whose father apparently does all the negotiations. And it's kind of a weird deal. But now they say that Jaden Daniels, the Heisman Trophy winner from LSU, is going to be the second pick by the Commanders. But did you see what they did last week? They told Daniels, we want you to come see us. We're going to talk to you. And they bring in like three other quarterbacks. They have them all have dinner together because they want to see how they interact. it was May and Penix and who is the other from JJ McCarthy from Michigan. Yeah. And Daniel's apparently, this is a screwball that they sent him, because, and his agent said that they weren't very happy about this. So I think, what are they throwing a little question mark into the thing? Daniels was, he finished at LSU, but he started Antonio's at Antonio State. At Arizona State, with Antonio Pierce being his quarterback coach, who's now the coach of the Raiders. So they have a really close connection. And now people are speculating the Raiders might move up even to get Daniels. Who knows? Nobody, everybody's lying the last month of the draft. Right? Absolutely. Everybody's lying. Absolutely. You can't.
All the time. And the things about the quarterbacks, they put so much emphasis on the quarterbacks. Think of all these guys that have just not made it. I mean, perfect example, Zach Wilson. He was the number two pick overall. He gets traded yesterday for a seventh round pick. Right? No, the Jets got a sixth round pick. Correct?
Well, Sean Payton wants him in Denver. Apparently, Sean Payton thinks he can make this guy, you know, a starter.
But Denver gets a seventh round pick in Zach Wilson. They get a seventh round pick in Zach Wilson. The Jets only get a sixth round pick, and he was the second pick of the whole draft.
Well,
the Jets are going to pay half his salary.
Yeah, how about that?
How about that? The Jets are going to pay him not to play for him. That's how bad they wanted him out.
But think of all the busts of these quarterbacks. Sam Darnold, some of these other one of the Jets, and they make so much emphasis. And people think about the Giants. We're going to get a. What do you think of the quarterback? He's not going to be any better than what they have right now.
Well, and one or two of these guys this year will probably be busts. That's the way it is every season. I hope it's not, and I don't think it's going to be my boy Drake May, who now people say the Patriots are going to draft at number three. But then nobody knows what they're going to do, and people could move up.
I'm reading today that the Patriots are going to trade down. They're going to wait. Who wants that third quarterback? Come up and get him, and we'll take a couple of your players and trade down. So apparently
the Vikings, who are what, number 11,
right?
They either love Drake May, or they love JJ McCarthy, or they love both of them. But they're ready to move up, maybe and get one of these guys before somebody else does. But they're talking about a lot of these teams moving up. Those Seattle, who is way down, at 16, something like that, they might move up now, they're talking about. People are putting Penix at Seattle because, of course, he's a Washington boy. I don't know. It's, you know, it makes it very intriguing. Even, Rich, as people say, now people saying the Giants might move up and get your boy Danny Dimes out of it. Why? Because they've got three dogs playing quarterback. The pizza guy from New Jersey.
I know, they got him. They need more than a quarterback. They need a run. They need a wide receiver. They need a running back. They need a defensive back.
And they need a receiver.
Not one of those guys going to win a Super Bowl.
you think Danny Dimes or the kid?
No,
pizza boy from New Jersey.
You think surrounded with good players. Eli Manning busted at the end because they had no offensive line.
Okay, who do you want the Giants to draft? Number one, who do you want the Giants to draft? They're six.
I don't want them to pick a quarterback at all, unless it's like fourth or fifth round. Get a great wide receiver, offensive lineman. They need an offensive line.
There's an offensive lineman from Notre Dame. I don't know how I know offensive lineman named Joe Alt. Supposed to be the best offensive lineman.
Taking him, but they need a wide receiver. They need a playmaker.
And he's going to snap the ball from the pizza delivery boy from New Jersey, right? And then you're going to get to the Super Bowl like that. I think you need a spectacular quarterback to get to the Super Bowl.
Now,
maybe they think JJ McCarthy is their guy. Maybe they think Drake May is the guy. They move up.
He's not.
Well, you know, McCarthy, okay,
no
you know,
talked about him being a pro guy early, and then they win the national championship, and Harbaugh comes on and says he's a great quarterback. He says he's a great quarterback all of a sudden.
He was a great quarterback
during the regular season. He was a good quarterback. Now he's a great quarterback.
He's been really good for 2 years, Rich, just because they never throw the ball at Michigan. The NFL loves this guy. I mean, and Harbaugh has said he's the best player in the draft. Of course, Harbaugh drafts fifth with the Raiders, and they don't need a. I mean, with the what are they called now?
The LA Chargers.
They don't need a quarterback, obviously. So Harbaugh says, "We'll come up." You know, he's just pumping his guy, McCarthy. But I've read where the Vikings think he's their guy. He's another Kirk Cousins. He's a better Kirk Cousins. And Kirk Cousins had a great career in the NFL.
Yeah, well, Harbaugh is all over him because he put a tattoo on his body and he's 15-0. How about that?
He should go to Hartenstein's tattooist to get a real tattoo.
All right, I want you guys. This is your assignment for next week. Before next week's show, is to pick the bust out of this draft.
Okay.
After it happens, pick the guy who's not gonna get it done.
Well, I know who Rich is going to take right away.
Curry, I got two words for you on that. You got to have a superstar quarterback, Brock Purdy. All right. When we come back, we're going to throw some other people under the bus. We'll get to the women. I don't think we're going to throw any of them.
Did Brock Purdy win the Super Bowl? I don't think so.
Getting close.
Well,
he's a whole lot closer than any of those
scores. He's a lot closer than the Giants getting there, that's for sure.
Well, was Patrick Mahomes a superstar out of Texas Tech where he played? Nobody knew that except apparently Andy Reid.
Yeah. Which is why he just got a new contract that makes him the highest paid coach in the league. He should be.
Yeah, he should.
Won the Super Bowl. All right. We'll be back. We'll throw some other people under the bus, including some folks from the PGA Tour. Stay with us.
Uh-oh.
Welcome back to Under the Bus. Bob Stevens, formerly of ESPN, Curry Kirkpatrick, of course, the Hall of Famer from Sports Illustrated, Rich Basirico, Hall of Famer from the Hardwoods. Caitlin Clark signs a deal with Nike, $28 million she'll make, which is about three more zeros more than her salary will be in the WNBA. And I think Nike got a great deal. She's going to sell a whole lot more than that in sneakers coming up, huh?
Without a doubt. For basketball, men and women, she's at the top of the list right now. Top of the list. And I think Nike did get a great deal for that. Did you see that they sold out her jerseys after the draft? Her jerseys went online and they sold them out. I mean, she has made a difference in women, especially women's basketball. I mentioned this last time. I even watched the national championship or the semifinals and the finals. I've never watched that. Yeah. And I watched just to watch her.
You'll like this one. The WNBA is saying this. The Cowboys have not confirmed it from the other side, but that more Caitlin Clark jerseys have been sold in this past few weeks than Dallas Cowboy jerseys in the last year.
Wow. That's crazy.
As a writer and a reporter, I texted Bob this week. There's a difference, and it was quite evident last week when Caitlin had her first media meeting with the Indianapolis Press, and Greg Doyle, who's a columnist in Indianapolis, greeted her with a heart sign, which she always gives, and it turned into be a very cringy personal thing where Caitlin was kind of disagreeing with what he was doing, and he was trying to say, "Well, if you send a heart sign to me, we'll get along." And it was very cringy, and it reminded me that I think men have a really difficult problem covering women. It's just different. And I remember as a guy covering women's tennis, covering women's basketball, you know, you just wrote about them. You had relationships with him in a different way. I can't really explain how. It's just different. I said,
do you think
it
will be different going forward? Is that probably what?
Well,
we
I
be
hope
talking
not.
About? Is it going to be hard?
Yeah. You know, I hope not. And of course, people criticize the media for sexualizing these women athletes now. And I don't know if that came into it. I think I told you guys a story. I when I used to cover Chris and Martina on the tennis tour. And I once did I tell you the story about Chrissy wrote me a letter after I was researching a story. Did I tell this on the podcast? I don't know if I did.
No, go for it. Tell it.
Go ahead.
Well, I was doing a story on her. This is at the end of her career, and she was stumbling along, and I was just, you know, and I had known her forever. And I was asking around the locker room, the women, about Chrissy's private life, because this was a part of the story, why she was struggling and why she was thinking about retiring. And she wrote me a note. I had forgotten all this about this. And I looked in my scrapbooks a couple of years ago, and I found this letter from Chris to me. And it said, Curry, I understand for your story, you've been asking the women players about my relationship with Donald Trump. This is like forever ago, when Trump was just a back page, you know, real estate mogul in New York. And she said, I'd appreciate it if you don't do that. That's, you know, that's private, and it's beneath you. And I said, wait a minute, beneath me, Chrissy, you know me better than that. You know, I basically said that to myself. But it's just the way. And I think Greg Doyle got caught in this situation in his press conference with Caitlin Clark, and it turned into a real negative. It made national news, and it just reminded me it's a different way. You know what happened last week also in women's sports is gymnastics reared its beautiful head. And in the NCAA gymnastics tournament, LSU won the thing. Well, LSU's most famous women gymnast is a girl named Olivia Dunn, who, I don't know if you know this, but she has 13 million followers on TikTok. She's a TikTok star. She's made more money in NIL than any man or woman. She, you know, for a few years now. I mean, she's this gorgeous blonde, and she sends out videos of herself, you know, in provocative outfits. And then, you know, America wants the media not to sexualize these women. Well, the week before, I mean, this set the gymnastics world afire when she was benched. Olivia Dunn was benched for the final session, which wow. LSU won anyway on California. Never explained why. But prior to the tournament, she had released this video, this provocative video, again, with her in an all-white leotard, posing provocatively in what looked like her disheveled bedroom. I mean, wait a minute, you know, and so then she got benched. And I wonder if that had anything to do with, of course, all the photographs and stories after the NCAA championship started out, Olivia Dunn and her LSU teammates won the NCAA champ. What are you talking about? She didn't even compete in the finals. I mean, come on.
It's all about getting clicks. And if you put Olivia Dunn in the sentence, and in fact, in the first part of the sentence, you'll get that to happen. Another woman who got a little bit of publicity this past week and who deserved it, though, yeah. Nelly Korda. Terrific performance, her fifth straight win. I went to school with Nancy Lopez. I know, and she did it early in her career. I know what she had to go through to right. get there. Congratulations to her. And
five in a row.
Throw under the bus there.
Five in a row. And, you know, I watched her finish, and she was exhausted. She wasn't so tired that she couldn't jump in the pond with her family and her coach and her whole team had jumped in the pond, but she was so tired. And of course, she has already pulled out of the tournament this week in Los Angeles. So she'll set the race for the record six in a row for another week. You know, you talk about Nancy Lopez. Of course, Nancy Lopez and Anika Sorenstrom are the only women to ever win five in a row before this. You talk about covering. I knew Nelly Korda's father. Who was Peter Korda, and people call him, well, he played on the tennis tour. He just didn't play on the tennis tour. He once reached number two in the world in 1992. He was runner up at the French Open to Jim Courier. He had wins over Sampras and Agassi and Lendl and Edberg. He was a terrific player. He was a tall, blonde guy from Czechoslovakia, and he had a flat top. He won the Australian Open. He won a major in 98 when he was number two in the world. And then he becomes this dad of, you know, his son played on the tennis tour, the men's tour. His other daughter played on the women's tour. And, of course, Nelly, he caddied for Nelly when he was 14 at the U.S. Women's Open. Peter caddied for his daughter, Nelly. And then, of course, he was on hand Sunday when she won her fifth in a row. You know, she walks the course exactly like our boy Shuffle Scheffler. She is so focused. She has no emotion. She's so tuned into what she's doing, and they're almost mirror of each other.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they both progress through the year. Scheffler's never won a tournament after April.
After April, that, yeah, 10 tournaments. Wow. In 51 starts, yeah, he's never won after April. What do you make of that, Bob? You're the golf guy.
I don't know. I think he'll. I just think it's coincidence. I think he'll be just fine. He talked about how well he played later last year, and he says I played really well. I just didn't win, and sometimes the difference is, as you guys know, is pretty fine, and he'll be all right. We won't see him now for 2 or 3 weeks as he. Enjoys his time off. His caddy enjoys his spot as number two on the money list, and
he's going to become a new father. Speaking of the caddy, how about after Scheffler finally won on Monday morning in Hiltonhead, the caddy comes running up for a flying chest bump, and Scotty Scheffler just looks at him like, "Are you out of your mind?" He just sits, no emotion whatsoever. Still after the Bob, which. Brings us to CBS and the Heritage, and you can go. Your turn.
All right. I saw this coming on Saturday. I'm actually covering the tournament. And on Saturday, the Tour's meteorologist, who is a spectacular meteorologist, I've known the guy for a dozen years. He's really good. And to say a weatherman is really good, I think says something. And he saw this coming. He says, Sunday at about 2 o'clock, it's going to might start storming. And by 4 o'clock, it's going to be raining pretty good. And I'm waiting for the Tour to say, okay, we're going to play early on Sunday morning. We're going to get this over with. It's going to hurt the ratings a little bit, but we're going to be okay. And the Tour didn't do it. Their own guy.
And they could have put him out in threesomes too, right, Bob? They could have started early, put him out in threesomes.
Yeah. I mean, there was no cut. They only had 69 players. Could have put them out both sides, teed off, and not even that much early. They could have gotten Scheffler off at 10 in the morning, gotten him done by 2 in the afternoon, and there would have been a crowd. You know, the Tour has a hard time promoting the victory because there was no crowd. There was nobody to see that.
What does CBS do, though, then? If Scotty Scheffler finishes at 2, they're on from 3 to 6. They have to
run it from 3 to 6. They let Golf Channel do some of the early stuff, and they lose ratings. I get that. They lose ratings on Sunday, but it's not just about Sunday. It's about, you know.
Well, I got another question. So it rains, it pours rain, then it clears up, then they come out. It's about 6 o'clock. They say they're going to come back on and sit. You're going to back out and play at 6. Okay, they got about 6 holes to go, right, Scotty? So they got about 2 hours. Then they don't play again. They say come back at 7. So now they've got an hour to get in 4 holes. Bob, why did they start again? Why didn't they just play why did they even start?
You know why? It's probably they got 9 more guys. There were 18 guys when they stopped at 6. There were 9 guys when they stopped, when they finally started at 7.
Yeah.
They got 9 guys on their net jets early.
Oh, but come on. Are you serious? Why did they start again? I mean, they knew. Nance even said when they came back on the air at 7, he said, this thing's not going to get finished. We're going to start again at 8 in the morning on Monday. If they knew that all along, why? I mean, I know there's tons of people still out there. Why they're out there in the rain and sweaters and jackets, it's freezing. Yeah. Why they're even out there. I mean, you got to love golf to be out there watching this. But why? You know, why didn't they say, okay, we're going to play the final one and start again on Monday morning at 8 and not play those holes? I mean, McIlroy, who was on 18, okay, he waits 2.5. Rory McIlroy, probably the most famous player in the world other than Tiger, he waits 2.5 hours to go out and make 6 on the final hole. I mean, happy? What is this?
Justin Thomas, who may be one of the most popular guys on the tour, has to wait until right at the end at 8 o'clock when it finally does. That's maybe who they did it for, was Justin, because once Wendell Clark got in and beat Justin, then Justin could go home. Otherwise, he'd already finished 2 hours before, and he'd have had to come back Monday just in case nobody else was 15 under par.
I mean, so they cut him off, you know, and Scotty still got what, 4 holes to play, which he played on Monday morning. Yeah. Yeah. And there's still, I mean, some people brave that cold in the morning. They must have gotten up at 6 to get out there. And, you know, they had a few people on 18 still. And Scheffler makes a couple great shots. And again, he never even looks up. I mean, these are fans out watching this guy, and he doesn't even acknowledge him. I still got to say, and of course, CBS had a real bad month. I mean, they cut off Billy Joel's concert two week before. Right. They cut off the Piano Man, and then they cut off the Excitement Man, Scheffler, 2 weeks later. I mean, Billy Joel has a song for this. His most latest song is "Turn the Lights Back On." They should have had lights on, you know, so they could finish this tournament.
Well, Speaking of songs, they came back and had that concert again. CBS aired that concert again.
They replayed it. They had to apologize. They apologized the next day and played it again on Friday. They can't do that in golf, I guess.
Hey, let's finish on music. Rich brought this up. Taylor Swift's new albums are out. Double album is out. Curry, you're our Swiftie. Good stuff.
I have not had time to engage in the Dead Poets. What she calls it, the Dead Poets something. I don't know. I feel like a dead sports writer is not.
It's early enough this morning. You need to go listen to it, Curry.
All right. Tortured I'll make sure. Poet. And it tortured poets. That's it. Well, I'm a tortured sports writer, and so I can't really relate.
Hey, so Bob, I get to throw one team under the bus before we go?
You bet.
Now we never talk about hockey, but I'm going to throw hockey under the bus. The Islanders were up yesterday, 3-2, and the Hurricanes scored 2 goals in 9 seconds. And they end up losing. They were up 3-2 with 6 minutes to go, and then they end up losing 5-3 because Carolina scored 2 goals in 9 seconds. This is the NHL. This is professional athletes. How did you let that happen? 2 goals.
It's called a comeback.
I love comebacks. Well, the Knicks. That shouldn't happen.
It's just when it's against the New York team, you don't like the comeback.
That's
At the end of this thing, we become a New York Post. We become a New York Post reader, you know, relating New York scores. Come on.
All my buddies, Tommy Yance, Jack Sharp, man, they care about this, Curry. They listen to us talk about New York teams. They want to hear it every day.
I know, and they love comebacks only when it's New York teams coming back. I want to throw one guy. I want to go back to golf, Bob. And, you know, our favorite local fun guy from Savannah, Brian Harman. Yeah. Brian Harman had a terrible Masters. He had a terrible heritage. And he came in after the first round. I don't know if you saw that, but it went viral. He had a 46-second press conference with the media because he closed out the first round with a bogey and a double. And it was kind of frosty coming in, and he didn't want to talk about it. But his press conference lasted about 3 questions. I'm going to give you the verbatim. Guy asked him, "Could you assess your round?" Harman played good except the last 2 holes.
Okay.
They said, "Well, how was your preparation between the Masters and the Heritage?" Harman went home. Not much. Spent time with my family. Last question. Could you walk us through that last hole, Brian? Harman, no, thanks. No, good. Am I good? Thanks. Walk out. 46 seconds. I love it. Brian Harman, Mr. Funster.
Curry, quick story. Well, we've gone way over, but quick story about that in the golf thing. I had the interview when I was with SiriusXM. The last tournament of the year before the playoffs, you know, number 125 gets into the playoffs. Number 126 goes home. Justin Leonard made a double bogey at the last hole to fall into 126. And I had to catch him coming out of the scorer's trailer. He wasn't having a news conference, and he really didn't want to talk to me either. In fact, he looked at me and walked away. But taking a guy out from under the bus and putting him in the driver's seat, he turned back around and said, "Okay, what do you need?"
Oh, wow.
We did our interview, and Justin Leonard sucked it up and did it.
That's great for him. My favorite post game press conference story is Jim Boeheim, the Syracuse basketball coach, came in after losing to Georgetown for the Big East championship. He came in. The game was at Syracuse. He came in. A guy asked him a question. Boeheim picked up the chair. No answer. No comment at all. Picked up the chair, threw it across the room, and walked out. That was his press conference. It's great.
All of this, every bit as good as John Chaney. We'll get John Chaney highlights for next week.
Okay.
Thanks, guys. It was a great show. Appreciate it. We'll talk to everybody next week. Our thanks to Justin Jarrett. Next week, we'll be back and throw some more people under the bus.
Sounds good.
Take care.
Take care.